maggots hacking each other's heads off. Truth be known, if the schools had their say, none of you would be in the games at all. The chamber only permits you to fight as a bloody prelude to the real games. Vadrian slowed and he glared at the smaller man.
I no longer like your tone.
Come, dear Vadrian, you...
In a street, packed with people, Vadrian gripped Bazange by the throat and brought him in close.
I've grown tired of you.
Bazange's face reddened and his tongue protruded. His hands pawed at the gladiator's thick forearms. Vadrian shook him, and then shoved him away, sending him crashing to the ground. Wasting no further time, Vadrian walked on, fuming at the little hellion's attempt to tempt him.
He was the fire. He had no friends, needed no friends, for Sedan provided him with all. All others were nothing more than maggots writhing in their own secretions.
Unfit heathen,
Vadrian murmured and went on his way. He didn't stop until poorly kept houses, built tightly together, lined both sides. The merchants became fewer, the streets became filthier, and the beggars became louder. The wretched souls sitting in the shadows with their hands out, scattered upon spotting his, Vadrian's, fierce form. The menacing gladiator marched to his Church of Sedan, magnificent in its time, but now old, dilapidated and on the verge of collapse. He marched past the rusted and failing outer gates, past gardens long since dead, and entered the wreck of a church, closing one of two rotting doors behind him. The street beggars came out of their holes once the gladiator had gone, but even then they stayed quiet for fear of attracting attention. There were whispers about the old church, warnings of not to be around the building at night. Those that did tended to disappear. Chapter 8. Hurt. Far above the lamplit streets, above yellow and green banners hanging from building and across well-trodden streets, the stars winked into existence. The games had long since closed for the day. Underneath the arena and within general quarters, free-trained gladiators rested. Those who didn't have a home, or couldn't afford lodgings, were permitted to sleep within the underground hall to avoid sleeping in the streets. Hundreds of men had staked out small individual territories before bedding down for the night. Torches and scattered fire pits illuminated the huge chamber in a red flickering hue, and long shadows moved along the walls. The air was warm, stale, and stunk of lingering blood and the breath of sleeping men. Snores, soft and bone-rattling, cut the silence. In one of the quieter sections, four men hunkered down, near a small iron brazier that Halm had pulled closer to a wall. They were only marginally successful with the day's wages, but there would be no drinking or wenching that night, however, as the Jaiberian had to fight the next day. Pignot decided to keep him company until there was something to celebrate. Mullock stayed, as he quietly informed his companions his dislike for drinking alone, and that in such a place as Sunja, it seemed wise to stay with greater numbers to avoid trouble. The one called Gaul remained as well, also finding some security in the presence of the others. The four of them lay around the small, smoldering fire, shifting from their sides or their backs, watching the flames consume the last of the wood.
"So then," Halm said, lying on his back and staring at the high ceiling,
"Gaul, what else can you tell me of this Samarhead?"
"There isn't much more to tell. The match was over before it began. Big men, from the lands of Great Eyes, wore plate and swung an axe."
He lapsed into silence, remembering the fight.
"It was quick. I saw no weakness.
He let the other man come to him, let him swing at him for a few moments, and then Samarhead drove his shield into the other's face.
Them lads from up north can be right and proper brutal," Pignot muttered.
"Aye that,"
Mullock threw in, on his back with his eyes closed.
"Apologies, Halm," Gaul said, "for not seeing more."
The Jaiberian tisked.
"No apologies needed, friend Gaul. You've said enough, and for that I'm thankful.
I should have been watching the matches myself.
You'll have plenty of time to watch the games, Pignot said, especially if you're smashed up like Goal here.
I hope you don't become like me,
Goal said in a dark tone. Pignot peered at the second man from Cree.
Bayless certainly did a dance on you, but it's you here talking.
Goal coughed and then took a deep breath.
I killed him, that's true. But I fear...
The man sighed.
I fear I made a mistake in doing so.
Why do you say that?
Harm and Mullock both turned their sleepy attention to the battered gladiator. Goal shifted and grimaced.
That was my first fight in the pit, and, I'm ashamed to say, I was nervous. As nervous as any other, I suppose. But, well, I remember him talking to me.
Bayless talked to you?
Harm questioned, lips drawn, pulled back from his bad teeth.
Aye, he did.
Well then?
Goal thought about it, and Harm exchanged a glance with Pignot. There was obviously something on the mind of the badly hurt Cree.
He was talking to me the whole fight,
Goal said.
He was telling me to slow down at first. I was trying to kill the man, straight off. I've been told I'm fast, so I believed I could cut up the butcher before he knew he was dead. All I could think was, this is the butcher of Balgathar, and if I didn't kill him, he would certainly kill me. So I tried to kill him first, but I couldn't strike the man. I couldn't touch him. He was a wisp of smoke and a stone all at once. Because he was older, I thought him to be weaker, and for that, he made me look a fool. I remember him saying, all right, boy, all right, and then shaking his sword arm as if loosening it. That's when I knew he was playing with me. He cut up my armor, broke the toes of my foot, and sliced me up like a roast.
Pignot nodded. Nothing to be ashamed of, lad. Bayless was a champion of champions. To even share the sands with him is considered an honor. The Cree looked deeply troubled.
I was trained to win by weapon masters in Cree. I traveled to these games to take everything, and I was confident I would. Yet an old man taught me the one lesson I did not learn, and that was the danger of being overconfident. He let me strike at him until I got tired. Then he cut me up, left me bleeding on the sand, and worse, he let me get angry. I was very angry when I crashed to the sand. I was stunned when I heard the people calling out for Bayless to finish me. I was supposed to be adored by the masses, and there they were calling for my blood.
Goal shook his head.
But he didn't. He spared me. Over the screams for my head, he told me to get up, that no one needed to die. He didn't want to kill me. He spared me. Me. I know you don't understand, but
He was just drawing it out, Pignot said. He was famous for that. He was setting you up for the kill. That was the butcher from Balgathar.
Goal would have none of it.
He was an old man, past his prime. Yet back in the games for, I don't know what. He didn't want to kill me, though. I could see that. He bested me, easily, granted me mercy. And I realized that the butcher had been leading with his leg and fainting. He had fooled me before. He did so again, and I recognized it for what it was.
And you killed the butcher, Harm said quietly, fully understanding why Goal was telling them his story. He wasn't a bad man, although the Cree probably thought of himself as one. He had entered the games thinking he was ready, and had been bested by a man who could have been his father. The butcher could have taken his life, but had spared him. Easily bested, chagrined, and then spiteful. It struck Harm then that this man from Cree was confessing.
I killed him.
A bitter-sounding Goal finished.
I struck out, brought him to the ground, and pinned him. Even then he was talking to me, even as I was staring into his eyes, and had my blade at his throat. He was speaking. And I killed him, killed the man who showed me mercy when so many wanted me dead. When I stuck my sword into his head,
The crowd adored me the way I wanted. But as soon as I was below, I limped my way, bleeding from everywhere, to the latrine, not to the healers. When I got there, I emptied my gullet and I had no further wish to be in the games.
None? Mullock asked.
Gaul shook his head. A final lesson from a dead man. I trained to be a champion, a killer of men. I found out I was not. Men around here slapped me on the back for what I did, what they think I did. But I wish I could undo it all.
The three listeners said nothing. Pignot exhaled and stayed on his back, and Mullock gazed at the fire pit.
You?
Harm started, but he couldn't finish. A good man had made a mistake, and it was clear that he was stewing in his guilt. Harm knew Gaul wanted judgment passed, but he could not give it. The Jiberian had made enough mistakes himself.
You sleep on it, young Gaul. Sleep on it.
Harm thought his words sincere. In truth, he didn't know what else to say. Nodding, Gaul slowly, painfully made ready to sleep. Once comfortable, he looked at them again.
Since that day, I haven't been able to sleep without nightmares. I hope this night will be different.
He closed his eyes.
Good idea,
Pignot said. Mullock spoke something in Cree, to which Gaul did not respond. Mullock then closed his own eyes. Harm took a little longer, reflecting on the words of Gaul. Chapter 9 Harm and Samahed. In a street-side alehouse, the four gladiators ate a breakfast of cold chicken and bread, drinking mugs of water to help swallow it all down. Harm paid for the meal, leaving only a single gold piece from his earlier winnings. The group then meandered to the arena, moving only as fast as the wounded Gaul. The young man didn't say much, but the others were cheerful and included him in their conversation. Harm intentionally would not let Gaul dwell on last night. In his mind, the man had made a mistake and apologized to the ones closest. Seddon only knew how many mistakes Harm had made in the past and would make in the future. Upon entering the lower levels of Sunja's pit, Harm notified the Maedir that he was present, and the arena official informed him he would be fighting shortly. The four companions moved into general quarters and located the huge cloth sack that belonged to the Jiberian. It was late morning, but the hall was full of fighting men, some practicing, some resting.
This place is too damned cramped,
Mullock grumbled, looking around.
Aye, it is,
Pignot agreed, but there's little choice in the matter. Mullock said nothing to that. They watched Harm untying the sack's knot. He reached in and pulled out his armor. The smell of sweaty leather wrinkled Pignot's nose.
And they call me Pig. Don't you ever air that out, man?
Why? Harm asked.
No one will steal it if it smells like shite.
Here, you, he said to Pignot, and held out the leather sleeve that would protect his sword arm. Make yourself useful.
If I was that, I would have emptied the bull on your armor last night. Freshen it up.
Harm shook the leather, growing impatient. Pignot took it and helped his companion slip into the sleeve. Mullock pulled out the metal greaves, noting the rust on the armor and the frayed leather.
You need new greaves?
Worming his arm through the leather protection, Harm bared bad yellow and black teeth.
I could use a woman as well, and a new body, and a new life, come to think of it. Maybe I'll win it all. Merely saying,
Mullock muttered.
Cheer up, good Mullock of Cree, Harm said. I've a special task for you this day.
What? Pignot buckled the armor into place and slapped it. Harm nodded thanks and reached for his leather purse. He pulled out his remaining gold coin and handed it to Mullock.
That's right, Harm said. Place it all on this poor Jiberian pig bastard.
Mullock took the coin and made it disappear.
I'll do that.
You're not afraid I'll run off with it?
Harm shook his head.
After all I've done for you.
They both chuckled. The Jiberian then looked at Gaul's broken toes.
Maybe you can keep an eye on your countrymen there?
I will,
Gol winced.
But I'll be as surprised as you are if he leaves us.
And miss all your company? Mullock asked, his spirit suddenly brighter. It'll be done. May the lords look after you.
Dare say they'll be looking after someone. Pignot stepped back and inspected the armoured Jiberian.
Mullock reached into the sack, brought forth the conical helm and held it out.
Not yet, Harm said. Let us sit and think for a while.
What about?
Gol asked. Harm smiled in answer. In another part of the pit, in the designated area for gladiators from established schools and houses, Dark Kurge paced the chamber reserved for the warriors of the House of Kurge. There were 10 gladiators present, but only one was scheduled to fight. The others provided an escort and, as a reward, were permitted to watch the day's events and even place wagers. 2 pit fighters aided the warrior from the lands of Great Ice, putting on his plate armor. The beast of a man stared forward, his dark eyes unfocused. Kurge stopped and inspected Samarhead's great musculature and strength of arms, and grunted in satisfaction.
Your foe is another free-trained whelp.
Kurge peered at the Northman's impassive face.
This day, I want you to do something special. This day, I want you to make the death a slow one. No killing in one stroke. Do you hear?
I hear, Master Kurge, the fearsome gladiator replied.
I want you to bleed him first.
Kurge continued, slowly.
Bring the crowds to their feet to see what you are doing. Then take off a limb of your choosing. Savor it. Let the man bleed and beg and moan. Take off another limb if the dog still stands. I want the people to know that you are in full control in this match. I want any gladiator watching to pause in fear. The House of Kurge is to be feared.
And if the dog falls to the sand?
Samarhead asked.
Kurge looked him in the eye. Cut him up, standing or on his back. Chop him into pieces.
Pieces, Master Kurge.
The impassive owner nodded and glowered at the men suiting up Samarhead. Kurge was in foul spirits this day, and it was all because of the one called Vadrian the Fire. The maggot had actually laid hands on Bazange, and left the agent in bruises and shaky spirits. There were times when Kurge could throttle the little man himself, but no free-trained topper was permitted to touch his agent. To strike Bazange was to strike Kurge himself, especially when he had the good grace to extend an offer. Such insult was unacceptable. He intended to have his revenge with the self-proclaimed son of Seddon. For now, however, Kurge wanted a sacrifice. He met the indifferent expression of Samarhead, the best fighter of the games.
Bloody pieces.
The grim gladiator nodded.
Harm of Jiberia, shouted the Media. It is your time.
The 4 companions regarded each other. Pignot quickly fitted the helm to Harm's skull, swatting the metal for luck. Mullock held up his shield and fixed it to the Jiberian's arm. Harm thought of using an axe, but changed his mind. He regarded them all from his eye slits.
Dying, Seddon. You bunch look solemn. I feel damn near perfect. Go and put that gold down, Mullock, and I swear by Simon's black hanging fruit I'll buy you enough drink to cross your eyes.
Pignot held out his fist, and Harm met it with his own.
Luck to you, Harm of Jiberia,
Gol said in a grave tone.
The only luck I have is bad.
He slapped his hanging gut, making the fat rolls quiver. Then he stalked off in the direction of the tunnels without looking back. Lamplight illuminated the tunnel painted in white, and his shadow flittered along the walls. Harm thought of Gol as he made his way past the assembled scars. Above, the crowd roared as one voice shouted out above them all, the orator announcing the opening of the day's fights. Harm turned a corner and stopped at a set of steps. Sunlight streamed in from above. He had been there 2 days ago, and yet it seemed much more recent. The aged gatekeeper, the same one as before, gazed upon the fat belly of the Jiberian and shook his head. He smiled,
revealing bare pink gums.
"You're a fat punce, that's plain to see.
I'm surprised you see anything, you ancient pants." The gatekeeper straightened, recognizing the fighter. Harm indicated the lever in the wall. "Are you going to wait until I'm your age before you pull that thing?"
"Brazen bastard,"
the old man muttered, yanking down on the device. Ignoring him, Harm went to his fate, sword and shield swinging as he chugged up the stairs and entered the light. The Jiberian stepped onto the sand, just as the orator finished introducing him. The crowd heaped both praise and curses on his name. The Jiberian smiled at the curses. Some toppers had obviously lost coin on him recently.
"Served them right," he thought. "They should have a better eye for talent."
With a raucous roar, the one called Samahed stepped into the light. He was dark, tall, and protected by plate armor the likes Harm had never seen before. In one hand, Samahed held a gruesome double-bladed battle axe that any other man would have held with two. His helm sported two great horns, his face completely hidden by a red iron visor. Harm took a steadying breath. He'd heard stories of the warriors from the lands of great ice, and none of them were good. Even as he recalled those tales, the orator introduced Samahed, lavishing title upon bloody title on his name. Harm sighed. The orator obviously enjoyed his own words.
"A thing of hell, an abomination forged of flesh, bone, blood, and steel, a child of war, and a destructor of man."
"A destructor of man?"
Harm grimaced.
"His mother was a destructor of man."
The orator had a way with, what was the word?
Theatrics.
He had a way with theatrics.
"He is a monster of a pit fighter,"
the old man continued.
"A brute amongst brutes, if you dare call him that. He is Samahed."
The arena erupted with cheers, letting Harm know who the favorite was.
"Unfit,"
the Jiberian thought, and brought up his sword and shield. He intended to make more than a few of them regret placing wagers this day. Encased in a tower of armor and taking his time, Samahed turned and bowed to the king's platform, then to the boxes of the schools and houses. Finally, he turned back to his opponent.
"Begin!"
the orator shouted. The crowd blared excitement, forcing Harm to concentrate on what Gol had told him.
"He just waited for the bastard to get closer,"
the crippled Cree had said. Harm glanced at the clear skies and the early afternoon sun, high overhead. The temperature was fearsome without wearing armor. He suspected the destructor of man cooked in that pot of his. A plan took form in the Jiberian's head. With theatrics of his own, Harm marched out a few steps and threw his arms wide, turning to the right and soaking up the sudden deluge of curses. He thought of asking Samahed if their fight would be to the death or not, but he guessed what the reply would be, if the imposing brute bothered to answer at all. Harm completed his turn, faced his opponent, and lowered his weapon and shield. And there he stayed. Expecting more action, the crowd grew restless within a few heartbeats, realizing the Jiberian wasn't going to willingly move. They screamed displeasure. Harm cocked an eyebrow at the angry voices, refusing to budge. Already the sun warmed his armor and drew sweat from his skin. His leather-draped arm felt slick, as did his head. Moments passed, and the jeering became vicious, matching and even surpassing the heat. Sweat beaded upon Harm's back and slicked earthwards, but he did not move any farther. The Jiberian exhaled and sighed at the rising temperatures. The games just had to be in the summertime. Lords above, he would need a bath after this day. Harm didn't move his helm, peering ahead, studying the warrior from the lands of great ice, far from his native clime. More curses cut the air, the people even more incensed with the lack of action, aiming venomous insults in Harm's direction. They ranted and roared, gesticulated wildly, and even called for the scars to intervene. That wouldn't do, not for Harm. So he cast an eye in Samarhead's direction, rolled his shoulders, and took another step, followed by another, which evolved into a walk. He trod warily to the center of the pit. The people shouted and grinned, applauding themselves for taking the initiative. Then the Jiberian stopped. Just shy of the midway point, Harm stopped, with fingers flexing on his sword, not taking his attention off the house gladiator. There, with theatrics, he drew a long, purposeful line in the sand. Harm dragged his sword across the arena's face, and he took his time doing so, making sure that the onlookers saw what he was doing. Once finished, Harm hefted his weapon and stepped back a pace. Groans flew from the audience. Then he gently gestured with his sword, inviting the brute from the lands of great ice to cross it. The groans became cries of excitement, but that terrible heat was slowly cooking the Jiberian. It was time to get dirty.
"This is a fight to the death,"
Harm shouted, spreading his arms in a question.
"Why don't you meet me halfway, you stupid topper? Haven't the bells? Come on then, you unfit cog. Cross the line and I'll ring those bells, even make it quick. Come on, you shiny pisser. I'll send you back to your snowy mother."
The silent gladiator did not move.
"Dog balls, man,"
Harm yelled and half turned as if ready to leave.
"You're a stubborn one. Or are you purposely being as thick as that pissy ice you think of as home? Come on, you great steel-plated ass-licker. I've come halfway. I'll not come any farther."
Hateful sunlight beamed down on the house warrior, transforming that tower of meat and metal into a dusty ogre. No reaction from the man. The spectators, however, agreed with the Jiberian. They directed their displeasure at the heavily armored gladiator, urging Samarhead to close the distance and use that terrible axe of his. They shouted at him to move, to even say a word or two, something to show he was still alive. An impassive Samarhead showed no indication of hearing any of it. Harm wondered if his foe was deaf.
"Get on with you,"
shouted someone in the stands.
"You came all the way from the north. What's a few more steps?"
came another.
"Move, you cogless bull, move!"
From where he stood, with the sun's rays pressing down upon him, Harm couldn't help but smile behind his visor. The spectators grew increasingly scathing of Samarhead's lack of interest. More insults scorched the air. Standing as he was in the light of the day, the house gladiator's dark demeanor began to thaw. Samarhead shifted, from one foot to the other. Delighted with the weakening of will, Harm bent at the waist and encouraged his adversary with sword and shield. He didn't bother shouting anymore as the crowds drowned him out. He wrapped his blade against his shield, thought of something better, then turned and showed the reluctant fighter his ass, giving it a saucy shake. Laughter amongst the onlookers, the exact effect Harm desired.
"He's offering it to you, lad,"
a voice shouted.
"Go get it! Ha ha, these men of the north prefer sheep.
Any livestock is fine in that frozen hell.
Mount him, lad, mount him, just like your father did that he-bitch of a mother."
Harm winced at that insult, thinking it particularly poisonous. That rancid barb struck, however. Samarhead's bull-horned helm turned in the direction of his school's box. The jeering was reaching the brute amongst men. Harm sensed it wouldn't be much longer. Then, for whatever the reason, the sun's heat, the growing insults of the crowd, the unseen prompting of his manager, or his own chagrin at Harm's not playing the way he wanted, Samarhead stepped forward. A single step, then another, and he stopped.
"The bastard moves like an old woman,"
someone sang out.
"Perhaps that armor is too heavy for him,"
added another. Samarhead resumed walking, swinging both his massive shield and battle axe, and the crowd's taunts changed to approving roars. Harm swallowed nervously. The lad got bigger the closer he got.
"Unfit,"
Harm muttered to himself, taking a better grip on his own tools. An idea lurked in his head, one he possessed ever since he'd talked to Gol about the grim Northman. Halm had to be wary of the battle axe. The weapon resembled a ceremonial killing tool purely for the show, but that Samahed wielded it with one arm was almost bewildering. Frightening, even. True to their treacherous core, the crowd resumed flinging insults at the Jiberian. Halm ignored them and adjusted his sword's grip for a backhand thrust. In just a few heartbeats, he intended on shutting up the works of them. Samahed shambled forward, a charging mountain picking up speed. The Northman raised his axe until sunlight rippled along its edge. His shield seemed an iron wall, his red visor inhuman. An immense shadow fell over Halm, and he realized just how damn big his opponent truly was. The spectator's roar reached a peak. Halm turned slightly and narrowed his stance.
Here it comes.
Samahed's mighty axe came crashing down, and the Jiberian lunged underneath the cut. The ogre from the lands of great ice slammed the edge of his shield down into the sand, barring any frontal attack on his legs. But Halm, surprisingly quick for his size, rolled under the axe and passed the giant's barrier. He turned and stabbed backward, thrusting his blade's tip deep into the thin armor about the man's ankle. Steel punched through metal and meat. Samahed roared. His foot jerked away, wrenching Halm's sword from his grasp. Blood spurted, a black ribbon that lashed clouds of dust. The armored giant fell, unable to keep his own body weight and that of his heavy armor upright. He crashed to his hands and knees, and looked up in time for Halm's greave-covered shin to smash into the side of his helm, jarring the gladiator's remaining senses. The blow stunned the crowd to silence. Grunting loud enough to be heard, and shattering the illusion of a murderous thing from Saemon's hell, Samahed recovered enough to swing his axe. Halm stopped the swipe on his lower greave and chopped his shield's edge into his foe's shoulder. Samahed dropped his axe and fell flat onto his face. He tried to rise almost immediately, but Halm kicked him square in that iron visor, flipping the gladiator onto his back. The resulting clang of metal on metal briefly echoed. Grimacing, Halm glanced down. The last kick had dented his greave. It was time to end it. The Jiberian threw away his sword and shield and picked up Samahed's axe. He held it across his pelvis as he gazed down at the dazed beast at his feet. The axe was heavy, and Halm wondered how in Saemon's hell the big man had managed to swing it with a single arm. That was a question for another day. With a groan of effort, Halm brought the axe up over his head and decided to send a message. For an instant, he saw the dark, understanding eyes of Samahed before the descending axe chopped the bull-horned head off at the shoulders. The axe blade went deep into the arena sand. Halm left it there. He noticed the spasmodic shiver that coursed through the headless torso. He also didn't miss the little jump of Samahed's head as it came free of his body. Blood gushed to a steady ooze. The Jiberian grimaced, straightened, and adjusted his conical helm. He considered the quiet audience just for a moment before he slapped the fat rolls of his belly. The masses recoiled, as if stung by burning pitch. Feeling good, Halm turned in the direction of the orator. The old man appeared just as shocked as everyone else. The Jiberian raised his fist.
"You're victor,"
declared the orator, finding his voice.
"The free-trained Halm of Jiberia!"
"I that,"
a defiant Halm projected, and flung his arms wide as cheering mixed dangerously with threats and angry howls. Not that it bothered Halm. Not in the least. Arms flung wide, Halm strutted toward the rising portcullis, taking his time, soaking in the moment. And in short time, the growing cheers drowned out even the most murderous of voices. The sudden stiffness in Dark Kurge's posture didn't go unnoticed, and when the free-trained fighter raised the axe over his conical helmet, poised to end Samahed's miserable life, Gastillo thought Kerge was about to cry out in pain. The intimidating owner had even reached forward, clutching at air as if to catch something falling, when the battle axe flashed down and the blood truly began to flow.
"Ho-ho!" Nexus blurted with an evil grin. "How the big ones fall, eh, Gastillo?"
Kerge flinched at the outburst, and Gastillo became aware of the heat rising from the manager's direction.
"Unfortunate round,"
Gastillo said somberly, his golden mask concealing his delight at seeing a free-trained dispatch Dark Kerge's favorite.
"My sympathies. Pains me to see a gladiator fall under the rabble."
Gastillo inserted a cloth underneath his mask and dabbed at the corner of his ruined mouth, soaking up the drool.
"Well, not for me," Nexus bellowed without a care. "Your man was butchered like an ox, and look at all that blood. I've not seen juice spilled like that at even one of my own wineries. That may very well be the kill of the games. What say you there, Dark Kerge?"
In answer, Kerge swung his murderous gaze upon the wine producer. The cords of his muscular neck stood out, his face as red as any grape in the sun. Without a word, the intimidating owner stood, kicked his chair out of the way, and stalked out of the box. Nexus chuckled merrily at the man's abrupt departure.
"Not much to say at all, lassie."
Gastillo nodded at the victorious pit-fighter disappearing underneath the raised portcullis.
"You can be sure that's one free-trained who'll be fortunate to live to see the sun rise. To kill anyone's man is one thing. To kill one of Kerge's trained dogs is another. And to make a spectacle of it?"
He shook his head. Nexus chuckled again.
"Really? The great house of Kerge can be so vindictive. Unfortunate. It's only sport. I must say this game for the commoners can be an enjoyable one after all."
Gastillo considered his own future plans and how they involved Nexus. He took a careful sip from his silver goblet and held the wine in his mouth, savoring it, while dabbing at his face.
"Harm of Siberia,"
he thought pleasantly. He would remember that name, not that it would matter. The wine merchant had said it all. Dark Kerge could indeed be a vindictive one. Having witnessed several seasons come and go, Gastillo had the good enough sense to avoid Kerge when he was in such a mood. He hoped Halm of Siberia would be wise and do the same, and to watch his back, both in and out of Sunja's pit. Chapter 10 Words.
"You hell pop!"
Pignot exclaimed, slapping Halm on his back as he returned from the pit.
"Did you expect otherwise?"
the Siberian asked.
"I don't know what I expected,"
Pignot said with a grin, "but I'm happier in one whole piece.
Thanks to this one here,"
Halm gestured at Gol.
"You gave me the idea. Samarhead was an armored giant, so I went low on him and cut out an ankle. Truth be known, I wanted his toes, but his shield was too big. I had to change targets."
"I don't think I did much at all," Gol replied, "but I'm glad that you won your match."
"I'm glad you're still alive,"
Mullock said, as Pignot helped the Siberian free himself from his leather sleeve.
"We ran down here to meet you. Did you place the wages?"
Harm asked, suddenly anxious.
"Oh, we did that,"
the Creed chuckled.
"We did that and more. I got 5 gold coins for my sword, and I dare not think about what I won."
Pignot nodded to Gold on his crutches.
"That one made a bigger pot." "How much?"
Harm asked.
"All that I had," the injured Cree answered. 14 gold.
"To my one,"
Harm scoffed.
"There's a reason why I'll never be a merchant."
"You don't have to be a merchant,"
Pignot said.
"You're a winning gladiator."
Depositing his sword and shield on a bench, Harm began getting out of his greaves. Upon removing the plate he had kicked Samarhead with, he noted the large bruise underneath the dent in the armor.
"Have to get that pounded out," Mullock said with a critical eye. "I can take care of that for you, for next time." I thought you only chop things. And pound things when I have to, Mullock replied. I can fix that easy enough. Leave it here for now.
Harm wiped the sweat from his body. Only two things concern me now, collecting my coin and getting to a bathhouse. I'll pay for you all.
I'll take you up on that, Pignot said. Unlike these two, I haven't a coin to my name.
You didn't wager?
Pignot shook his head. Nothing to wager with. But that's talk for another time, and if you lend me a few coins, I'll pay them back when I can.
I think I can do that.
Let's be off from here, then, Pignot said. With that, the four made their ways through the fleshy clutter of general quarters, passing the other men who would fight that day. Some of the assembled men congratulated the Jiberian. Others got out of his way.
Harm of Jiberia!
The Medea's voice cut through the good spirits of the companions and caused them all to turn about.
Tomorrow, Harm of Jiberia!
The Medea shouted. Your blood match will be tomorrow. Are you able to fight? Harm sighed.
I am.
Tomorrow, then.
First match, Harm of Jiberia.
The Jiberian scowled. No drinking or wenching this night, lads.
Not for me, anyway.
Harsh words. Pignot clapped him on the shoulder. You almost sound responsible now. On the way out, they visited the paymaster, who handed Harm his prize. The Jiberian's purse jingled from the weight of 20 gold coins, and he kept a firm grip on it. Just outside of the entryway of the sun, the four companions visited the domis, who handled the wagers. They lined up for one of four enclosed booths surrounded by menacing scars. Others who had also won their wagers waited to collect their winnings, while, one line over, people made their wagers for the next fight. Gol, Mullock, and Harm identified themselves with their scrawl and were given their coin. At 4-1 odds, each man had won enough to be laughing.
Well then, lads, Harm said, I'm off to the baths, and then an early supper. But no drinking.
Then neither will I, Gol said.
Nor I,
Mullock threw in.
I can't anyway,
Pignot said, as I'm living off you until my first match.
When is that?
Harm asked.
The day after yours, it seems. I fight some topper called Darcevo.
Da,
Harm began, and stopped in his tracks. Just ahead, standing in the middle of the grounds surrounding Sunja's pit, stood Vaedrian the Fire. He wore armor and carried a scabbard on his hip, but his spiked gauntlet was nowhere to be seen.
Heathen maggots all!
The tall, blonde man declared,
prospering over the deaths. Have you no shame? You're as bad as the Jiberian shite with you.
Pignot spoke first.
Aren't you a part of these games, you brazen cog?
I do not partake in the greedy practices of wagering.
Ah, this one is just like the clergy in my homeland,
a smiling Harm said.
One corner of his mouth lies, while the other gives the truth. You're in Sunja's pit, you pig bastard. With two victories, you've already collected twice.
I collect no such coin, Halborn.
Vaedrian's head arched backwards as if he had gotten a whiff of something unpleasant.
I fight for Sedan alone, to collect gold at the death of another.
Even those as lowly as you is against his divine word.
But killing them straight away is fine with Sedan?
Pignot asked.
The faster the better, so that the divine may reclaim those lost souls. But you,
Vaedrian pointed at Harm, you'll be a special case.
I'll dispatch you to Saemon's hell, where you belong, burning for eternity for mocking the Church of Sedan.
I only mock Aslikers,
Harm retorted, not proper churches.
The Church of Sedan is a proper church. It is the church to which all will soon be tethered to better embrace the light of Sedan.
Under your command, I suppose?
Of course.
Harm had nothing more to say. Recognizing Vaedrian as one fish hooked through the brain pan, he started walking toward the man calling himself the Fire. The self-proclaimed son of Sedan tensed and gripped his sword's pommel. Harm stopped in his tracks.
You're damn quick to go for your blade. Get out of my way, and we won't have a problem.
You have a problem, spawn of Jiberia,
Vadrian hissed. Standing so close, Harm could see the warrior's eyes were even crazier looking than Pignot's.
I know about Jiberia,
Vadrian continued. The people there are nothing more than ignorant wastes of flesh, heathens all. I look forward to travelling there one day, to purify the land in Seddon's name. Only then, with you unfit savages scoured from the face of Seddon's earth, will the smells cease plaguing Sunja by way of the spring winds.
You're unfit,
Harm told him, studying his face.
I've been touched by the hand of Seddon, dog, blessed with gifts physical and spiritual, to go forth and do Seddon's bidding. Where better to start a crusade but in the darkest pit? It begins here, maggot, with the souls of all disbelievers sent to Seddon by the strength of my fist and the cut of my steel. When I have purged the arena, I'll scar the entire city, all of this place. I tell you this, Jiberian, because tomorrow I send you to Seddon or Saemon, whoever will take you. A seething, clearly unstable, Vadrian waited for a retort. Harm gave him one. The Jiberian looked at his companions and indicated for them to walk around the man in their way. Gol hopped along on crutches, while Pignot stood eye to eye with Vadrian and scowled. Vadrian kept on speaking, however.
You'll walk away from me now, Jiberian pestpot, but there will be no walking away from me tomorrow. You go and enjoy whatever pleasures you have waiting. Enjoy the gluttony and the drink that saps your soul. Tomorrow it all ends. Tomorrow I send you.
Still glaring, Pignot backed off and circled Vadrian after the others had gone. He eyed the fire and retreated a respectable distance before turning his back. Behind him, Vadrian spoke on, faster and with greater passion.
Tomorrow, Jiberian, you shall feel the might of Seddon on your heathen neck. Seddon has empowered me, to vanquish all that displeases him. I send you to him tomorrow. Harm, savage from savage Jiberia, I shall send you.
A pensive Harm shook his head at the outburst.
I shall send you,
came the parting shout. Then nothing. The crowds filled in the space between Vadrian and the departing four. They walked on for a bit before Mullock leaned into Harm's side.
Are you worried about tomorrow?
About him? Harm frowned and rattled his head again. But if I wasn't in the games, I'd have chopped him right there. That one is right and proper and fit in the head.
I'll drink to that, Pignot exclaimed.
Enough of him, the Jiberian declared. Seddon will damn me if I don't get to a bathhouse soon. I stink.
Long after the four men had gone, Vadrian the Fire stood in the throngs of milling Sunjans and berated the lot. He preached long and loud enough that scars gathered at a distance. They kept their backs to buildings, waving the masses by at times, and simply watched the angry man shouting at people until no one walked within 10 paces of him. He chastised the passing people, warning them of gluttony and wanton pleasures of the flesh. He ranted about the sins of the Sunja, and he swore to deliver them all into salvation. After a while, Vadrian grew tired of speaking. The people remained well out of reach. They were wise to do so. Seddon, however, would bring them to him. He'd gather a flock with each victory in the pit. The arena was key. If he showed strength of arms, power of will and might of soul, then the masses would cling to his very person. Tossing his head back and inhaling deeply, Vadrian decided to make his way back to his church and seek an early night. Tomorrow, he intended to make an example of the fat man. Seddon would enjoy the sacrifice. With that final thought, Vadrian started walking. After spending the remainder of the afternoon in a public bathhouse, the four friends decided it was time to eat and do a little celebrating. The slaying of Samahed was an occasion that merited something better than the usual fare, and since they had coin to spend, they meandered through Sunja's streets until locating an alehouse of good reputation. They found a table and ordered roasts of beef with vegetables and covered in rich sauce. Mullock paid for the food, and Gol paid for the drink.
When the meal arrived, the serving girl left the victuals on a great platter in the middle of the table, and they tore into it.
"This could be the start of something good," Pignot said as he chewed. "I owe you all for this, and I don't forget my debts."
Mullock shifted a mouthful of food into his right cheek so he could speak.
"I'll see that you remember."
"I'll sleep in a real room tonight," Harm said. "Spend a few coins on something good."
"They have rooms here," Gaul said. "I already paid for one."
"I'll get one as well," Harm replied. Mullock grunted.
"Might as well, then."
Pignot lowered his head and ate.
"Fear not," Harm said, and shoved the man's shoulder.
"I'll get you a room. You should have at least one night out of general quarters."
"No, that would be unwise," Pignot said.
"As I said, I remember my debts. A night in the general quarters will push me harder to win. Stop me from suckling."
"I've been thinking," Gaul said between bites, "about us. Free-trained fighters. And the games."
"What about it?" Pignot asked, chewing loudly and wiping his face with a hand.
"We don't have to merely be free-trained."
"We don't," Pignot smirked, muscular forearms flexing as he reached for more of the roast.
"Not in the least," Gaul said. "Think of it. The four of us can fight. Fight well, in fact. But we aren't respected in the least. The established houses and schools in Sunja despise us because we pose a risk to their investments. We have no backing. Our weapons and armor are either our own or taken from the piles left behind by dead gladiators. It doesn't have to be that way."
"What are you saying?" Pignot asked. "That we start our own school? Our own house?" Gaul leaned over the table.
"Why not?"
"Coin is why not," Mullock said.
The two Crees regarded each other for a moment. Gaul then reached under the table and plopped his leather purse onto the surface. That silenced the others, and for a moment, the only sounds heard were those of the alehouse's regular customers eating and socializing.
"Foolishness," Pignot muttered. "We can't just announce ourselves as a house of gladiators."
"Why not?"
Gaul pressed.
"The other houses won't have it, for one."
"And it takes more money than one purse of gold," Mullock added.
"Let the man talk," Harm said with a glimmer of interest. "There's no harm in talk, is there? Unless it's about Pignot, that is." The Sanjan winked at the Jiberian. Gaul nodded his thanks and went on.
"I killed a champion and almost died for it. But that champion did not represent any house when he fought me."
He pointed at Harm.
"This man here just killed off a gladiator from the House of Courage. Do you think there won't be a challenge there? Another blood fight? They might not even wait to get even. They might gut you outside of the arena. I've heard of such attacks on free-trained warriors."
Harm nodded. "I have too." "As have I," Pignot added with a frown.
"I only just got here,"
Mullock smiled, but became serious when the others didn't share his humor.
"I've heard stories about fighters disappearing in the night," Pignot went on. "Fighters that had killed or wounded a man badly enough that he couldn't continue. Free-trained fighters, who would defeat their foe and walk away, never to be seen again. I figure they were either driven out, or there are more than a few corpses in Sunja's sewers. Or bones, after the rats are done with them,"
Harm added. Mullock paused in chewing, had an image, dismissed it, and kept on eating.
"That's what I'm talking about," Gaul started again. "As we are now, we're nothing. We're the dogs, and we're seen as that. We're set against each other as well as the established schools, and if we win, we're still dismissed. No free-trained fighter has ever been champion of the games. Never. Think on that. And none of us will, until we band together, share our secrets, our knowledge, and watch out for each other. Divided as we are now, no free-trained gladiator will ever win the games, because the House of Courage, or Gastillo, or Nexus, or Tylo, or any of them, won't allow a free-trained to be champion. One way or the other.
If," Harm cocked an eyebrow, "if we did do something, what would you suggest?"
"Pignot's already said it. We start our own house, a free-trained house."
"We would not be free, then?"
Mullock said.
"I'm still thinking on that,"
Gaul responded,
but I don't think we have to change anything. Think of it. If a fighter joins us, all he promises is to share his knowledge and train, but no one has to pay any gold. If one of us wins, a portion of the winnings will go into a pot to finance the house and draw upon as needed.
We'd need training grounds, Harm said. Lodgings, food. That will take a good amount of coin.
A huge amount. Then we'll have to win, frequently. Take a portion of each man's winnings, as I just said. Perhaps even place wagers in the house's name. Even the recognized houses do that. It'll add up. In return, we'll offer a place of refuge, a place to train, and a place to sleep without fear of waking up in the sewers.
That quieted the three men.
Think of this, Gold challenged. Right now, there are hundreds of free-trained gladiators here at the games, all calling General Quarters, which is a rat hole, home. Hundreds. We are already together, yet divided. If we have our own house, we become the largest force amongst the schools. We're no longer threatened by the house gladiators who strut about as if they were gods.
That part will never change, Pignot smirked.
But you understand what it is I'm saying,
Gol insisted. Understanding is thirsty work. Harm raised his mug.
Aye, that,
Pignot agreed and drank deeply. Mullock appeared thoughtful, but in the end he drank as well.
Another pitcher here,
Pignot called out, lifting the empty one.
Think on it, lads.
Gol hoped his words wouldn't fade into the night.
That's all I ask.
He took a drink from his own mug. Harm eyed the younger man, saw how his shoulders slumped. What he said made sense. There was a problem in it, however, and that was one of leadership, and the question of whether or not the gladiatorial chamber would actually allow a new house to form while the games were happening. Saying and doing were two different things, and Harm was smart enough to recognize that. He wondered if the wounded Cree sitting at his table recognized it as well. Chapter 11. Dark Matters. In darkness, brimming with dust and the smell of decaying flesh, Vadrian slept on the floor of his church. He slumbered on his back, his head resting on a rough sack filled with a few possessions. He was a light sleeper, the son of Sedan, but even he didn't sense the figures creeping into his sanctuary, as noiseless as ghosts. The church didn't allow any light from the moon outside, and the gloom was as oppressive as a violated tomb. The invading ghosts, six of them, moved in a line down the center of the church. They edged past broken pews, toward the altar at the front, careful not to disturb the sleeping Vadrian. They carried a single hooded lantern, its narrow beam of light revealing the path as they stepped with caution. Vadrian slept before the altar, snoring loud enough to cause a few of the intruders to smirk. They spread out around him and, on the signal from one, pounced on the sleeping warrior. Vadrian woke with his arms and legs held fast. Rough hands gripped his skull. A fury rose up within him, and his efforts to break free tripled. He roared.
You black-hearted bastards! Let me up! Let me up! I swear I'll kill you all for violating his church. Let—
An open hand slapped his face. Hard. Livid rage flared in Vadrian's eyes, but then a blade appeared above him, just a flash of metal, and the weapon descended to the bobbing knob of Vadrian's throat. Feeling that steely sliver against his cheese pipe, Vadrian ceased struggling at once.
"Not pleasant, is it?" asked a voice in the darkness, "to have a knife at your throat."
The lantern's light shone into Vadrian's eyes, blinding him.
"And let me be clear,"
said the voice. "Move, and the last thing you see will be a fountain of your own blood, a gurgling fountain." "Understood." Vadrian swallowed. The weapon's edge rubbed against the knuckle of his throat.
"Understood," the pit fighter whispered.
"Excellent," the voice said. "I've tried to contact you before, twice, in fact. And the one that did find you, you weren't very nice to. My man only wanted to speak business, and you were quite forceful with him, needlessly so."
"I will speak now,"
Vadrian said.
"Far too late for civilized talk.
but I'm willing to talk like theirs. Now then, to business, and I'll let you sleep."
Vaedrian wasn't certain to which type of sleep the silhouette referred.
"Tomorrow you fight a man called Harm," the voice declared. "I want him dead. You will kill him. There will be no quarter given. I don't think you would anyway, but I want to be clear on this. I want that man dead, in bloody fashion. Do you understand?"
"I understand."
Vaedrian understood all too well, but the request was one that he had no trouble in following. It was all part of his grand design.
"Do this for me, and I will be most appreciative. I was actually willing to make you an offer before. I see talent in you. Now, however, I'm wary of offering you anything, including your life.
I..."
The voice cut him off.
"Quiet. Listen, I've heard you rant about Sedan. Well, tonight you're under the knife of Saemon's child, in his darkness. And while I believe the world would be a much safer place without the likes of you, I also see that you have a purpose. Kill Harm of Jiberia, and I will have my man talk with you again, under more agreeable conditions. And don't consider murdering him outside the arena."
"You have my word."
"I do."
There was a smile to the words, "like this poor dog over here. The reason for the perfume." The light shone in a direction Vaedrian could not see, but he knew what it revealed.
"Who was he?"
"I don't know."
"You just went and twisted his head around like that and hung him off a hook for amusement?"
Vaedrian winced. "He tried to speak with me."
"He did?"
Another smile around the words.
"About what?"
"He wanted me to join his master's school."
"And you killed him for that?"
"Aye."
"Which school?"
"I did not ask."
The ghost paused. "Did you happen to kill another? I sent two men to you and one has gone missing." Vaedrian knew the second man, but thankfully he had possessed the sense to bury the body outside in an old grave.
"No."
The ghost thought for a moment, then exhaled harshly.
"You're a special one, Vaedrian. I'll give you that.
My men will release you upon my word. If you rise up in arms, they will hang you by your guts from the rafters overhead and leave you swinging. Do you understand?"
"I do."
"Kill Harm."
"I will."
"Good." A reflective silence.
"Sleep well, then."
The silence stretched on, as if the ghost had paused to consider something, but then he was gone. Tense heartbeats later, the knife at Vaedrian's throat left. Hands released his limbs. He didn't rise straight away, so he lay there, listening as his visitors departed, the sound of their passing receding. Only when they had gone did he move. With a trembling hand, Vaedrian wiped the cold sweat from his brow. His stomach knotted. Never had he come so close to dying. Never had he felt so helpless. He took a deep breath and got to his feet. The gloom of the church's interior never seemed deeper.
"Kill Harm,"
the voice said. Vaedrian rubbed the stubble of his throat.
"Praise Sedan,"
he silently prayed. In another part of the great city of Sunja, across a bridge and river, three men made their way toward the innermost parts. The leader was a man called Bojen, of average height and build, in his early 40s, with a head of clean white hair. Bojen didn't like being in this shadowy part of the city. His master had given him a task to do, however, and he dared not disappoint him, not even if it ultimately meant travelling to this filthy place. Bojen didn't know he was going to be sent into the sewers, however. If he had, he would have dressed for it. Expensive leather sandals meticulously stitched and fashioned covered his feet, while soft silk leggings and a white shirt dressed the rest of him. His cloak was one of rich fox fur, and he found himself hitching it further up by the fistful, not wanting the hem to make contact with the ground. The three men quietly made their way off the main road, down a stone stairway which slipped below the bridge and waterline. Foul vegetative matter crusted the stonework. To their left, behind a thick brick wall, ran the inner river and moat surrounding Sunja's palaces. To their right was another solid barrier, red and scratched in places, but otherwise remarkably well kept. Sewage percolated the air, causing Bojen to cover his mouth and nose with a cloth. He released his cloak, allowing it to drop to his ankles. Cursing, he stopped and inspected the length and saw that it didn't touch the wet steps. Not yet, anyway. It would sooner or later, he knew, and that made him swear again. Behind him, his guards said nothing. The little group halted at the bottom of the stairway, before a brick tunnel brimming with darkness. The smell became far more potent, threatening to gag Bojen, and he knew he'd have to bathe soon after this meeting. If he was truly unfortunate, he would have to burn all of his clothes. "This way," he muttered miserably, hoping the passageway remained dry. They entered that black maw, feeling their way along the wall. Bojen's fingers dredged up damp sludge that had collected on the brick, and he fluttered his hand to dislodge the filth. A torch came into view near the end, the glow appearing damn near magically. The visitors paused at the sight. A figure dressed in black robes stepped around a corner, his face partially concealed by a deep cowl, his torch lifted to the ceiling.
"Only one of you may come closer,"
the figure spoke. Hesitantly, Bojen signaled his guards to remain. The robed man beckoned Bojen closer and led him around the corner, down a surprisingly long length of brick and mortar. Bojen sidestepped puddles and ducked under strands of filth hanging from the ceiling, often taking second glances at the pitfalls. The mysterious guide didn't slow in the least. The guide's torch disappeared around a corner, becoming a glow. Bojen barely caught a whimper as he scurried to catch up, wincing as his right foot splashed through an unseen puddle. Water soaked his toes, the touch sickening. Muttering curses, Bojen proceeded carefully. He wasn't fit to such dealings under the earth, in the smelly damp and wet. He should have sent another in his place. Turning the corner with a bump and a grimace, Bojen saw that the torch had stopped just up ahead. He closed the distance, seeing that the light had been placed in a sconce, but the guide had vanished, perhaps continued ahead in the dark. The air thickened with moisture, and the puddles widened into pools. The sewage smell became much stronger. Bojen stopped in the light, peered deep into that blackness beyond, and wondered if he were supposed to proceed. Keeping the cloth firm against his mouth and nose, he reached for the torch, set into a sconce.
"Come no further," spoke the voice in the dark.
That stopped the agent.
"I cannot see you,"
Bojen said, the words muffled by his cloth. Silence.
"What did you say?"
Sighing, Bojen lowered his cloth and winced at the stench.
"I said, I can't see you. No one looks upon the faces of the Kasjuntals. If you did, you would die. You were told to come alone."
"The streets are a dangerous place after dark," Bojen answered, quickly covering his mouth.
"State your business."
"My master wishes a man dead."
"Who?"
Bojen lowered the cloth. "A gladiator, free-trained. Shouldn't be a problem for you."
"What's this dead man's name?"
Bojen said it with a gasp, knowing full well he'd have to burn his clothes later and that he was no longer sure it was just water seeping between his toes.
"Describe him," commanded the voice.
Bojen did so, coughing at times.
"You know our fee?"
the voice asked.
"I have it here. Show us."
Fuming, Bojen reached for a small sack hidden beneath his cloak. He held it up to the light and shook it. Coins jingled.
"Stand where you are and hold it at arm's length."
The sack was heavy, but Bojen did as he was told, stretching his arm further into the darkness, as thick and fragrant as sewage water. He jumped, startled by two white hands appearing and plucking the payment away from him. They vanished back into the gloom. Coins rustled.
"When do you want the gladiator dead?"
Bojen composed himself. "He fights tomorrow, the first match of the day. We want him killed then, in the pit, and we do not want to be connected to his death." A pause.
"His death will not come back to you."
Eyes watering, Bojen nodded vigorously while all but smothering himself with his handcloth.
"Take the torch and leave us. Tell your master this man will die tomorrow, during his match, as instructed.
Bojen dropped his cloth. Do not fail. That summoned an ominous silence. A different voice whispered from the dark. Do not threaten us, lest you be given a stronger warning. Those haunting words raised the hair on Bo Jen's scrubbed neck. He held the cloth to his face again, fearful he'd said too much. The moments stretched, and he tensed, ready to shout for his guards if anything should rush him from the dark. Nothing did, however, and time stretched on.
Hello? He called tentatively.
No answer.
Are you there?
Bo Jen tried again, and heard only the dripping of water. Tisking to himself, yet relieved the encounter was concluded, he sighed. He plucked the torch from its sconce, the flame flickering low, and considered venturing deeper into the tunnel. That brought on a scowl. Bojen scolded himself for such a foolish thought. It was time to vacate this miserable place. He made his way back through the tunnel, the smell receding as he went, and remembered the words of the killers in the dark. They spoke of warning. Bojen wondered what they meant by that. He slowed, detecting a new smell on the air, one that brought him close to retching. The torchlight revealed the corpses of his two guards lying dead on the brick stairway, their throats cut, their blood flowing over the stairs. Bojen stopped and gazed upon the dead men, his torch hand trembling. Panic rose in his chest, and he quickly looked behind him, then ahead. Then the two dead men again.
Sedan above, he whispered.
He stooped to study the pair, cringing at their open throats. Both men had been taken from behind. Bojen straightened and regarded the narrow staircase, wondering how they could have been killed in such a place. It was much too small for a killer to take them by surprise. Bojen hadn't even heard a thing, not a single squawk of terror, and he hadn't gone on that far ahead.
Sorcery,
flashed through his mind. That was all the impetus he needed. Bojen quickly edged past the dead men and ascended to the streets. He ran back to his employer, fur cloak blowing in the wind.